So today is the holy appearance day of the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the scriptures, there are many descriptions given of Gauranga Mahaprabhu's appearance. And the amazing thing is that all of the Vedic scholars prior to Gauranga Mahaprabhu appearing on this planet could not see them in the scriptures. And yet, after Gauranga Mahaprabhu appeared, when those same verses were cited, it was obvious that it was talking about Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And the scholars were thinking, how did we not able to pick it up? Why weren't we able to pick it up? And the answer is given, only the most advanced devotees will know Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nobody else will know Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why? Because what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving to people cannot be given by anybody. Not even Krishna will give what Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives. Pure love of Krishna in the mood of Radharani. That is an impossible mood to achieve. Impossible. But one time that it is made available is when Gauranga Mahaprabhu appears. So this is a very nice verse written by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, as we know, at his time was the most intelligent devotee. He was the most intelligent Brahmin of his time. He knew the verses so well that he could give multiple explanations of the same verse. For example, we know of the very famous Atmaram verse that everybody talks about. He would give 9 different explanations of the Atmaram verse. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard him very nicely, very patiently, heard all of his verses, and then said to him, but there are more explanations. And he thought, how can there be more explanations? No one has given even 9 explanations. I've given 9 explanations. People give normally 1 explanation or 2. I've given 9. How can there be more? And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives 62 explanations of the Atmaram verse. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, after he hears that, he can clearly see that Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than Radha and Krishna themselves. He immediately understands, this is our lordships. This is Radha and Krishna. Only they would know these explanations. Nobody else would know. So he falls at the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He clasps his feet and begs his mercy and says, I'm so fallen. I am so uneducated. I don't have any understanding. Please bestow your mercy upon me so that I may become qualified to serve. Basically, he asks for service. So one of the verses he quotes at that time is said to be a Chintamani verse. This verse, if chanted 3 times a day, will award perfection of your best desires. Whatever your best desires are, will be fully perfected. You will attain pure devotion unto the divine feet of Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu and the fulfillment of all desires. If chanted 3 times a day, this verse is called the Chaitanya Dwadasa Naam Stotra. Sri Chaitanya. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Dwadasa Naam Stotra by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. The verse goes, there are two parts to the 2 verses. Chaitana, Krishna Chaitana Gaurango Dvijanayakaha, Yatinam Daninam Cheva, Nashinam Chishiromanihi. Then the next part is, Raktam Bharadara Shima Navadvipi Shudakara, Prema Bhakti Padascheva, Shishachinananastatha. So the verse starts as Chaitana. Chaitana means the living force. Krishna Chaitana, the all-attractive, supreme living force. Gauranga, he of fair bodily complexion. Dvijanayakaha, the hero amongst the twice-born brahmanas. Dvijanayaka, then Yatinam Shiromani, meaning the crest jewel of sannyasis who wander freely, because there are 3 types of sannyasis, and some types of sannyasis do all 3 things. Sannyasis wander freely, they carry staffs in their hands, and they also renounce everything. So when they wander freely, they are known as Yatinam. You might have heard of the Yatis also in Sanskrit. They are travelers, they're big travelers. So Yatinam Shiromani. He's also Dandinam Shiromani. Danda means the stick, the staff. So he's Dandinam Shiromani, meaning the crest jewel of sannyasis who carry staffs. And he's also Nyashinam Shiromani, meaning the crest jewel of sannyasis who renounce everything. Then the second verse, Raktam Bharadara Shriman Navadvip Shuddhakar Prema Bhakti Padashiva Shishachinanastatha is explained. Raktam Bharadara means He who wears a red cloth. He who wears a red cloth. Shriman means the supreme opulent one. Navadvipa Shuddhakar means the source of nectar in Navadvipa. Prema Bhakti Pradaha means the bestower of ecstatic loving devotion. And Sri Shachi Nandana means the delightful son of Mother Shachi. So then the verse ends with Dwadeshtani Namni Trisandhyam Yahapathen Naraha Tasya Vancha Shushiddhihi Syat Bhaktihi Srila Padma Puja. That person who recites these 12 holy names of the Lord 3 times a day at dawn, noon, and dusk will achieve the perfection of all their desires, all of their best desires, and will attain pure devotion unto the divine lotus feet of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. So I wanted to say a little about, sometimes people think that where is the proof that Gauranga Mahaprabhu is himself, Radha and Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. In my hand I've got here 17 pages of different parts of the Vedas, Padma Puran, the Samaved, the Atharva Ved, the Yajur Ved, the Rig Veda, the Mahabharata, you know, the different Upanishads, just 17 pages. And the author who compiled this says, if I actually quote all of them that he actually was able to find out, it literally run into hundreds of pages. But he gave 17 pages just so that anybody who may be doubtful that Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And the story is told how he is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's a very nice story is told about that. I'll be reading that. And then we'll talk about how is it that Gauranga Mahaprabhu came to planet Earth. So, it is said, first we start with Rupa Goswami. Who is Rupa Goswami? Rupa Manjari. Who is Rupa Manjari in Krishna Lok, in Krishna Krishna Leela? She is the most important of all devotees in Krishna Leela. She is the one who directs everybody how they're going to do different services. And her one of her chief associates is Manjuwali Gopi. And Manjuwali Gopi tells the gopis what their service is for the day. And after hearing from Rupa Manjari, and Rupa Manjari tells all the Manjaris what they have to do. So Rupa Goswami quotes this verse, Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namine Gauratvishaya Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Krishna Chaitanya, who is the most merciful incarnation. He has appeared in a golden color for the purpose of freely distributing pure love of Krishna. Nobody else distributes freely pure love of Krishna. Imagine if somebody in this world was freely distributing $1 billion to anybody who would want to come and take $1 billion. What would happen? The whole planet Earth would go into chaos, wouldn't it? Everybody would be jumping all over and climbing each other's backs to reach the person that they can get their $1 billion. Even though the person might have said, everybody will get their $1 billion. Make a line. And you know, everybody will get, nobody will make a line. They'll all run. Me first, everybody jumps in. Well, $1 billion is nothing compared to what Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving everybody. Pure love of Krishna. This we go back to the spiritual world and enjoy in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the pastimes of Lord Nityananda and Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu, these two different pastimes that are happening, with full abandon, with full opportunity to do anything and everything. And I often say in times when I give lectures, sometimes we'll think, I'm an insignificant devotee. That person is a temple president. That person is a sannyasi. That person is a guru. That person is a GBC. By the way, that's the pecking order. We just heard in Mayapur at the GBC meetings, that is supposed to be the pecking order. And so, and then I think, but I'm nobody. Nobody even knows my name. Sometimes my guru forgets my own name. So I'm nobody. I'm not even initiated. So what will happen to me? And here, the explanation is given that those who actually become followers of Gauranga Mahaprabhu and dance in front of his deity, sing and dance in front of his deity, will go back to Godhead. That is Gauranga Mahaprabhu's guarantee. No matter, I was talking to in Mayapur with Srila Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj, who's a very, very intelligent devotee, extremely intelligent. So he was explaining to me that japa can be done by those who are in high consciousness. So it has a requirement. You have to have some high consciousness. Then you will be able to japa. Otherwise, we have heard again and again, many people take to japa and say, it's doing nothing for me. This japa is not working for me, and then they give up their japa beads and they stop doing japa. Right? We hear many times people say that. So you have to have some level of standard of consciousness to do japa. But he said, there's a verse quoted in the scriptures that says that for kirtan, there is no such requirement. Anybody can do kirtan and get full benefit. And we can see that. That in kirtan, people who don't like to do too much japa, in kirtan, they're very happy. They're jumping up and down, they're so happy. So we should always, when we're in front of the deity of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, always dance, always sing. Do these two things. Because then you are guaranteed to go back to the spiritual world. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's guarantee. And really, nobody else's guarantee works very well except Gauranga Mahaprabhu's. His guarantee is the greatest of all guarantees. So it is mentioned that Lord Chaitanya's incarnation is mentioned and predicted in many, many scriptures. The funny thing is, all the great, great scholars of the past didn't see any of these verses. Because he's called the Channa avatar. Channa means hidden. He's hidden. He's so hidden that even the verses, if you read it, you won't make out that that's his verse. That's talking about him. Now, when I read the verses, you'll say to me, how did they not know that that verse was about Gauranga Mahaprabhu? But Gauranga Mahaprabhu has this ability. He has this mystic power that if he doesn't want you to understand something, even if you're reading it, you won't understand it. And the topmost scholars, I'm talking about the topmost gurus at the time, did not explain these verses like after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears. Then he explains. Even Krishna did not explain these verses. Of course, Krishna knew. But he was not going to tell because it's like sometimes we have these birthday parties for people, right? And what do? We don't tell the person whose birthday it is. And we tell the person somehow, we trick the person to coming to a certain place. And everybody else knows there's going to be a big birthday party and they're all there. And the person walks through the door and everybody goes, surprise! And everybody goes, Haribol! And then the person wonders, oh my God, this is such a big program. So Krishna also wanted everybody to see the surprise of Lord Chaitanya. He wanted to surprise everybody. In the birthday, everybody wants to surprise one person. But this one person wanted to surprise everybody. This is like a reverse, the negative, you might say, of the birthday, picture or a photograph. So it is said in the Atharva Veda, in the Purusha Bodhini Upanishad, it is said, this is the verse. Where is the verse? Here's the verse. Saptame Gauravarna Vishnor Ityanena Swashaktya Chaikyam Etya Pratante Pratur Avatirya Saha Swehi Swamanum Shikshiyati. Translation. In the seventh Manvantara, look at what the verse says. In the seventh Manvantara, the Supreme Lord will, accompanied by his own associates, descend in a golden form. He will teach the chanting of his own holy names. Still nobody made out. But this is an avatar. This is the description of an avatar being given here. And further in the same verse it continues. I'm not going to read the Sanskrit because I want to read some other parts. It says, the Supreme Lord himself says, Krishna is speaking, when between 4,000 and 5,000 years of Kali Yuga have passed, when did Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appear? 500 years ago, right? Now it's 5,000 years. But between 4,000 and 5,000, he says, I will descend to planet Earth in a place by the Ganges shore. I will be a tall, saintly Brahmin devotee of the Lord and have a golden complexion. I will be renounced and free from all desire. I will accept the order of renunciation, sannyas. I will be a devotee advanced in bhakti yoga. I will chant the holy names of the Lord, means his own holy names. The Lord is speaking himself. I will taste the sweet mellows of my own devotional service. Only the greatest devotees will understand me. So it tells us, I mean, can you imagine? We say that we know Gauranga Mahaprabhu, right? We know that Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. We know that he's Radha and Krishna. Krishna is counting us amongst the greatest of devotees. How much encouragement there is for us here. And yet sometimes we feel discouraged and despondent, and then we become a little, depressed. We have no reason to be depressed. None at all. In the Samaveda, the Lord states, he says, to deliver the people devoured by the sins of Kali Yuga. This is actually true. We're actually devoured by the sins of Kali Yuga. You look at what's happening in Japan right now. You look at what's happening in Libya. The people can't do a thing about it, right? Now, we may think, well, it's not going to happen in Dallas. You know, it's not going to happen in Dallas. It'll happen other places. But those places were thinking also the same thing. It's not going to happen in Japan. It's going to happen everywhere else, right? And the people in not very long ago in the United States of America in New Orleans, they were thinking it's not going to happen in New Orleans. Actually, they were really enjoying themselves in New Orleans. They would have these huge parades called what would they call this parade? The Mardi Gras. And in the Mardi Gras, they forget everything. They even forget their own body. That's how much they're enjoying. They forget everything. And still, look what happened in New Orleans. And the richest country in the world couldn't get food to their own people, shelter to their own people. Japan is the second biggest economy in the world. Of course, now it's been taken over by India and China. Now, India and China, the new rich. I just went to India. The people there are so rich. I went to a restaurant, our own Hare Krishna restaurant, because there was no other place open for me to eat. And so, and I was thinking, I looked at the prices on the menu, and everything is 150 rupees, 160 rupees on the menu. Nothing is cheaper than 150 rupees. I'm thinking, oh my God, man, this is going to cost me a lot of rupees to eat. So I thought I'll just have one item, chana bhatura, because it was 150 rupees. It was the cheapest one on the thing, so I thought I'll buy. And I see all these Indians coming in, popping 500 rupees, 1,000 rupees, 1,500 rupees down and taking prasad. I'm thinking, oh my God, man, we're poor in America. These guys are rich. You know, we can see actually, you know, that it's amazing what's happening. That actually we are devoured by the sins of Kali Yuga. He says, I will, accompanied by my associates, descend to the place on earth by the Ganges shore. I will be a Brahmana, Avaduta, Sannyasi. Again and again, I will chant the holy names of the Lord. Now you might say, well, this is very true, but I can understand why the other great scholars couldn't pick up that this is about Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because it doesn't mention his name or anything. Now I'm going to quote you some verses that you'll be amazed what it says in that verse. And I'm going to skip over a number of verses from the Garuda Puran, the Kurma Puran. Here's the Gauranga. Here's the Garuda Puran. Okay, this is what it says in the Garuda Puran. One of the verses in the Garuda Puran. Says, the Supreme Lord who enjoyed pastimes with the gopis. Who enjoyed pastimes with the gopis? Who else? Balaram, right? There are only two. It couldn't be only one of these two people. Balaram enjoys with the gopis and Krishna enjoys with the gopis. Who day and night filled the people of Vrindavan with happiness. Okay, again, these two, right? Who killed Kamsa? Who killed Kamsa? Only one killed Kamsa. It was Krishna who killed Kamsa. And who in the war between the Kauravas made friendship with the Pandavas. Who made friendship with the Pandavas? It was Krishna. Balaram didn't. Balaram was making friends with the Kauravas. So he went on pilgrimage. Right? Okay. It says, we'll come again to the earth. That's what the verse says in our Vedas. It says, we'll come again to planet earth. Of this, it says, there will be no doubt. Of this, there is no doubt. His arm will be decorated with a bamboo danda. That means he will be a sannyasi. Only sannyasis carry bamboo danda. The only other guy who carries bamboo that I know of is? Who carries bamboo? Krishna. Right? He carries the bamboo flute. He's the only other guy who carries bamboo around. So it says here, of this there is no doubt. His arm will be decorated with a bamboo stick or danda. He will be a sannyasi. And his name will be Chaitanya. How do you like that? He even gives his name. And yet, The scholars couldn't pick up that there was going to be a Lord who was going to come in Kali Yuga, whose name was going to be Chaitanya. They couldn't pick it out. That tells us sometimes when we read, we're not paying attention, are we? We're really not paying attention. We're not really reading. We're thinking, well, it's my duty to read. Let me just read. But we're not really paying attention to what is being said there. If we did, any one of the verses will show us our original form. We'll gain our Swarup Siddhi if we just understood one of the verses in Bhakti Shastra. This is so amazing. And then I'm going to skip a number one because there's one that comes up where a nice explanation is given, which is from a text called, how to find it when you have to find it. Okay, page 15 and 16. Okay, here it is. Page 17, can't find page 15. 7 of 17. Okay, here it is. In the Kapila Tantra, this is the Kapila Tantra, speaking from the Atharva Veda, by the way. This is in the Atharva Veda. Atharva Veda carries a lot of great information. Actually, the temples in India are now finding out about that, you know. And they're doing things according to the Atharva Veda, and the whole temple is transforming, becoming so powerful that they can't fit people inside the temple. So they have to build new centers. New Delhi is a good example. New Delhi inaugurated its number 32 center on the day of Lord Nityananda's appearance. Why I know is because they asked me to do the inauguration. So I went and saw it. Beautiful center. They can't make enough centers because there's too many devotees coming, too many people coming. And they're following the Atharva Veda and doing what it says in the Atharva Veda that you should do. And now if we start doing it here, you will see a transformation here too. But anyway, in the Kapila Tantra, it is said, I'm not going to read the verses. It's a fairly long verse. I'm just going to say, translation. Then, this is the translation. Then, Sri Radha said to Lord Krishna. Now, this is why Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, Sri Radha said to Lord Krishna, oh, beloved, please hear my words. I yearn to become one with you. Please show me a form where you and I embrace and our two bodies become one. A form filled with the love I bear for you. A form filled with auspicious and blissful pastimes. A form that brings bliss to the heart. A form that unites our two natures. This is Radha's request to her beloved. Hearing his beloved's words, which were filled with joy and love, Lord Krishna passionately embraced her. Then, by the touch of his inconceivable potency, their two forms joined and became one. A single form endowed with Sri Radha's divine love and glorious splendor. In a dream, Lord Krishna showed all this to Sri Radha. So there are other direct references found in the different tantras and the yamalas, which are all part of the different Puranas and the Atharva Veda. But here's another verse from the Atharva Veda in the Skanda Purana that refers to Gauranga Mahaprabhu. We say that, you know, how come that all these great devotees couldn't figure out Gauranga Mahaprabhu? This one says, outwardly of golden complexion, but inwardly, Krishna, I will take my birth in the womb of Shachi Devi. How do you like that? What a clear description. No doubts who you're talking about here, right? Accompanied by my associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions, I will assume the role of a human being. So at different places he says, Chaitanya, that there's one place where he says the name will be Gauranga. Another place where he says my mother's name will be Shachi Devi. Another place where my father's name will be Jagannath Mishra, and Jagannath Mishra had another name too. His name was Purandara Mishra. The name Purandara comes from Gauranga Mahaprabhu's father. His name is Purandara Mishra also. So at the time of Lord Chaitanya, he was known as either Purandara Mishra or Jagannath Mishra. So anyway, so these are the verses from the various Puranas and from the Vedas. Now I'm going to speak from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is the highest of all texts. Lord Krishna thought in Goloka, I shall personally inaugurate the religion of the age Nama Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord in the form of Lord Gauranga. By accepting the role of a devotee, I shall make the whole world dance in ecstasy and thus realize the four mellows of loving devotional service. In this way, I shall teach devotional service to others by personally practicing it. For whatever a great personality does, common men will follow. Of course, my preliminary portions can establish the religious principles for each age, but only I can bestow the kind of loving devotional service which is performed by the residents of Raja. How kind, huh, of Krishna. Besides this secondary reason for Lord Krishna to appear once more, taking the form of a devotee, there is another confidential purpose of a very personal nature. Even though Lord Krishna had tasted the essence of loving mellows by performing his conjugal pastimes in the company of the gopis, he was not able to fulfill three desires. He was not able to fulfill three desires which he wanted. Therefore, after his disappearance, the Lord thought, although I am the absolute truth and the reservoir of all rasas, I cannot understand the strength of Radharani's love, with which she always overwhelms me. Indeed, the love of Radharani is my teacher. Look at who Krishna's teacher is, the love of Radharani. Do you think the love of Radharani is greater than Radharani, or is Radharani greater than her love? Who is greater? Huh? No, Radharani is greater. Come on. Love is just one of her aspects. So if the love is Krishna's teacher, who is Radharani? The Param Guru, right? The love of Radharani is Krishna's guru, then Radharani is the grand spiritual master of Krishna. This is Radharani's position, by the way. Indeed, the love of Radharani is my teacher, and I am her dancing pupil. For her love makes me dance in various novel ways. When she shows a love to him, he dances in ways that even he didn't know he could dance like that. Whatever pleasure I get from tasting my love for Srimati Radharani, she relishes 10 million times more. 10 million times more than what Krishna enjoys, Radharani is enjoying. Can you imagine that? That's hard to imagine, right? It's like once Mal Krishna Maharaj was telling me, because I when you're a businessman, you're busy, and I used to chant on the clicker, you know. When you're at work, you clicker. You've got to do 16 rounds minimum. You can't find the time in the day to do 16 rounds. So you chant a few rounds in the morning, and then all day long you carry the clicker, and you go click, 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 click. So he saw me doing it once. He said, did you know that if you chant on one bead of the Tulsi Mala, that is like chanting 10 million rounds on the clicker. 10 million rounds on the clicker is equivalent to one bead on the 108 beads of the Tulsi Mala. So he says, why don't you become smart? Why don't you become smart? And carry the bead bag in your hand and put your hand in the bead bag and chant one round. That'll be far better than 10 million rounds on that. Far better than 108 multiplied by 10 million rounds on that clicker. That's the day I threw away my clicker. Never since I've had the clicker in my hand. But here's an explanation of 10 million again. Radharani, she relishes 10 million times more by her love. Although there is nothing greater than Radharani's love, since it is all-pervading, it nonetheless expands constantly and is completely devoid of pride. There is nothing purer than Radharani's love, and yet its behavior is always perverse and crooked. Sometimes you wonder why Krishna is crooked and why Krishna's stick is crooked. These two can't help themselves in front of Radharani. They become crooked when they're in front of Radharani because her love is so powerful, it bends them out of shape. Completely bends them out of shape. That's how powerful she is. This was one desire that increasingly blazed in Lord Krishna's heart. Then upon seeing his own beauty, Lord Krishna began to consider as follows. My sweetness is unlimitedly wonderful. When he saw himself. Only Radhika can taste the complete nectar of my sweetness by the strength of her love. which acts just like a mirror, whose clarity increases at every moment. Can you imagine a mirror whose clarity increases at every moment? And you see yourself better and better and better. Of course, in our case, we wouldn't like to have such a mirror, because it'll expose all of the warts and the moles. You know, sometimes you put your glasses on, you look in the mirror, and you say, oh, better take the glasses off and look in the mirror. Because you see all your warts and moles, and you think, oh my God, that looks pretty ugly. But in Krishna's case, his beauty is ever increasing. Although my sweetness, being without limit, seemingly has no room for expansion, it shines forth with newer and newer beauty, without admitting defeat, and thus constantly competes with the mirror of Radharani's love, as if they both on increasing without admitting defeat. Devotees taste my sweetness according to their respective love, and if I see the sweetness reflected in a mirror, I also become tempted to taste it, although I cannot. Because you can't taste your own sweetness in the mirror, right? You can lick the mirror. You won't be able to taste it. You'll taste the mirror. Upon deliberation, I find that the only way I can relish my sweetness is to take the position of Srimati Radharani. This was Lord Krishna's second desire. And his third desire was expressed while thinking as follows. Everyone says that I am the reservoir of all transcendental bliss. And indeed, all the world derives pleasure from me alone. This is a very important statement. In the Nectar of Instruction, Krishna also says very clearly, no one in this world can do anything except me alone. Now we think, no, I can do some things. I can do this, I can sleep, I can breathe, I can eat, I can offend devotees, I'm very smart. You know, we think that we can do, but actually none of those things we can do without the mercy of Krishna, or without the mercy of Krishna allowing us to become so proud that we think that I can offend others. Who then can give me pleasure? I think that only someone having 100 times more qualities than myself can give pleasure to my mind. And such a person is impossible to find. He has to now look for somebody who is 100 times more powerful than he, give him pleasure. And yet, in spite of the fact that my beauty is unsurpassed and gives pleasure to all those who perceive it, the sight of Radharani gives pleasure to my eyes. Although the vibration of my flute attracts everyone within the three worlds, my ears become enchanted by the sweet words spoken by Radharani. Although my body lends its fragrance to the entire creation, the scent of Radharani's limbs captivates my mind and heart. Although there are various tastes due to me alone, I become charmed by the nectarian taste of Radharani's lips. Although my touch is cooler than 10 million moons, I become refreshed by the touch of Srimati Radharani. Thus, in spite of the fact that I am the source of all happiness for the entire world, the beauty and attributes of Sri Radhika are my very life and soul. My eyes become fully satisfied by looking at Srimati Radharani. And yet, when she gazes at me, she feels even greater satisfaction. The whispering murmur of the bamboo trees that rub against one another steals away Radharani's mind, for she thinks it is the sound of my flute. She embraces a tamal tree, mistaking it for me, and thus she considers, I have gotten the embrace of Krishna, and so my life has now become fulfilled. When the fragrance of my body is carried to her by the wind, Radharani becomes blinded by love and tries to fly into that breeze. When she tastes the betel nut that has been chewed by me, she merges into an ocean of joy and forgets everything else. Thus, even with hundreds of mouths, I cannot express the pleasure which Radharani derives from my association. Indeed, upon seeing the luster of her complexion, our pastimes together, I consider my own happiness to be negligent. To be negligent. We can see that, you know, Lord Anantasesh has tens of thousands of hoods, right? And he can't, with tens of thousands of hoods, speak enough about the glories of Krishna. And Krishna is saying, with hundreds of mouths, I could not speak the glories of Radharani. Expert sexologists say that the happiness of the lover and the beloved are equal, but they do not know the nature of transcendental love in Vrindavan. Because of the indescribable pleasure which Radharani experiences, I can understand that there is some unknown mellow within me that controls her entire existence, Krishna is saying. I am always very eager to taste the joy that Srimati Radharani derives from me, and yet, in spite of endeavoring, I have been unable to do so. Therefore, in order to fulfill my three desires, I shall assume Sri Radhika's bodily complexion and ecstatic loving sentiment, and then descend as an incarnation. Desiring to understand the glory of Radharani's love, the wonderful qualities in him that she alone relishes through her love, and the happiness that she feels upon realizing the sweetness of his love, the Supreme Lord, Gauranga Krishna, decided to appear in a form that was richly endowed with her emotions. First of all, the Lord had his respectable superiors incarnate on earth, such as his mother and father, Sri Sachi Devi and Jagannath Mishra. In addition, there were Madhavendra Puri. Who is Madhavendra Puri? The spiritual master of? Who is himself the spiritual master of? Lord Krishna. So he's the grand spiritual master of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, Madhavendra Puri. Keshava Bharati, Ishvara Puri, Advaita Acharya, Srivas Pandit, Thakur Haridas, Acharya Ratna, and Vidyanidhi. All these are considered his elders. These are his elders. They appeared before. Before the appearance of Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu, all the devotees in Navadvip area used to gather at the house of Advaita Acharya. In these meetings, Advaita Acharya preached on the basis of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, decrying the paths of philosophical speculation and fruitive activity, and firmly establishing the super excellence of devotional service. In the house of Advaita Acharya, the devotees took pleasure in always talking about Krishna, worshipping Krishna, and chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. However, Advaita Acharya felt very pained to see how practically all the people of the world were devoid of Krishna consciousness and completely merged into material sense enjoyment. Knowing that no one can gain relief from the cycle of repeated birth and death without taking an interest in the devotional service of the Lord, Advaita Acharya compassionately pondered over the means whereby people could become delivered from the clutches of Maya. Advaita Acharya thought, only if Lord Krishna appears and preaches the path of devotional service by his own example, will liberation become possible for all people. Therefore, I shall worship the Lord in a purified state of mind and constantly petition him with all humility. Indeed, my name Advaita will be fitting only if I am able to induce Lord Krishna to inaugurate the Sankirtan movement of chanting the holy name, which is the only religion of the age. While Advaita Acharya thought about how to satisfy Krishna by his worship, the following verse came to mind. Sri Krishna, who is very affectionate towards his devotees, sells himself to one who offers him merely a tulsi leaf and a palm full of water. A tulsi leaf and a palm full of water. This is from the Gautamiya Tantra. Advaita Acharya considered the meaning of this verse in the following way. Lord Krishna cannot find any way to repay the debt that he owes to one who offers him a tulsi leaf and water. Therefore, the Lord concludes, Advaitacharya concludes, since there is nothing in my possession which is equal to a tulsi leaf and water. We have so many things that are more valuable than tulsi leaf and water, right? That we think is more valuable. But Lord Advaitacharya felt there was nothing more valuable than tulsi leaf and water. He said, I will liquidate the debt by offering myself to the devotee. Well, this is Krishna speaking, by the way. This is Krishna saying, since there is nothing in my possession, in Krishna's possession, that is equal to a tulsi leaf and water. Wow. That's a big statement, isn't it? He said, I'll liquidate the debt by offering myself to the devotee. Thereafter, while meditating upon the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, Advaitacharya constantly offered tulsi buds in water from the Ganga. While thus engaged in worship, Advaitacharya petitioned Krishna to appear by his loud cries, and this repeated invitation attracted the attention of the Lord, causing him to descend. Sri Upendra Mishra, the Brahmin who was formerly the Gopala named Parjanya, the grandfather of Lord Krishna, was a great devotee and scholar, one of Upendra's seven sons, Jagannath Mishra, moved from Srihatta to the banks of the Ganges at Nadia, and then married Sri Shachidevi, the daughter of Nilambar Chakravarti, who was formerly Gargamuni. He was Gargamuni in Krishna Leela. Before the appearance of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu, Jagannath Mishra, who was formerly Nanda Maharaj, begot eight daughters in the womb of Shachidevi, who was formerly Yashoda. But just after birth, they all died. Being very aggrieved at the loss of his children, one after another, Jagannath Mishra worshipped Lord Vishnu while desiring a son. Thereafter, Sachimata gave birth to a baby boy named Vishwarupa, who was the incarnation of Lord Baladev. Being very pleased, the mother and father began to serve the lotus feet of Lord Govinda even more devotedly, because they realized that their happiness was by his mercy. So when you have problems, we should worship Gauranga Mahaprabhu more and more. Then it'll turn into blissfulness. Then in the month of Magh, 18th February 1486, of the year 1406, Shaka era, Lord Krishna entered the bodies of both Jagannath Mishra and Shachidevi. Thereafter, Jagannath informed his wife, I see so many wonderful things. Your body seems to be effulgent, and it appears as if the goddess of fortune is personally residing in our house. Wherever I go, everyone offers me respect. And even without asking, they give me money, cloth, and grains. Sachimata replied, I also see wonderfully brilliant things appearing in the sky as if offering prayers. Jagannath Mishra then said, in a dream, I saw the effulgent abode of the Supreme Lord enter into my heart. Then from my heart, it entered into your heart. And thus I can understand that a great personality will soon take birth. After this conversation, both husband and wife felt very jubilant, and with great care and attention, they rendered service unto the household Shalagram Shila. However, when Chachimata's pregnancy approached the 13th month, that's 4 months overdue, 13th month, and still there was no sign of delivery, no C-section, they didn't go, okay, now let's do C-section here. No, natural birth. Jagannath Mishra became very apprehensive. I'm not saying that we shouldn't do it now. I'm just saying that at the time there was no such thing as C-sections. And still there was no sign of delivery. Jagannath Mishra became very apprehensive, naturally. At that time, Nilambara Chakravarti made an astrological calculation and predicted that the child will be born that very month, taking advantage of an auspicious moment. So that's how they used to solve their problems. They would go to the family priest and say, what's up? What's happening? And then they would do the astrological calculations and figure out what's happening and then give the answer. Thus it so happened that on the evening of Falgun Purnima, in the year 1407 Shak era, corresponding to the modern year 1486, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made his appearance at Navadvipa. So 1986 was 500 years. So now it would be 515 years. 2011 is 515 years since his appearance. 86, you're right. 525 years. Not 515 years. Thank you. Somebody's got better math. His appearance, at this time, Rahu considered. Rahu, who is Rahu? There are two malefic planets, they said. They're all the planets, there are two of them that are malefic. Rahu and Ketu. So this is Rahu now. Rahu considered. When the spotless moon of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is about to become visible, what need is there for a moon which is full of black marks? This is Rahu. He's normally a troublemaker. He's now playing good guy. Even the bad guys turn good guys when Gauranga Mahaprabhu appears. Thinking in this way, Rahu covered the full moon, and so all of the Hindus went to the banks of the Ganga in order to bathe and chant the names of Krishna and Hari. Because when there is a eclipse like that, people think, well, that's very, very inauspicious. So now they run to the Ganga so that they can be purified. They don't get affected by the inauspiciousness of the moon or the sun becoming eclipsed. And they all started chanting Krishna and Hari. So Gauranga Mahaprabhu is so brilliant. While the Hindus were thus vibrantly chanting the holy names of the Lord, the Mohammedans jokingly imitated them. See, it's so nice. Everybody's chanting. The Mohammedans are imitating the other guys. So everybody's now chanting Krishna's names. In this way, at the time of Lord Chaitanya's appearance, everyone was engaged in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. In all directions and within everyone's mind, there was peacefulness and joy. In Shantipur, Advaita Acharya and Haridas Thakur began chanting and dancing in a very pleasing mood, although no one could understand why they did so. While laughing again and again, they also went to the Ganga, and at that time, Advaita Acharya took advantage of the lunar eclipse to distribute all kinds of charity to the Brahmanas. Upon seeing how the whole world had become jubilant, Haridas Thakur addressed Advaita Acharya in great astonishment, quote, "Since your dancing and distribution of charity appears very pleasing to me, I can understand that you have some very special purpose." In Navadvip, Srivas Thakur and Acharya Ratna, who was also called Chandrasekhara, immediately went to bathe in the Ganga, and while chanting the holy names of the Lord in great jubilation, they also gave charity by dint of mental strength. So they did their charity by mental strength. It's said that actually charity by mental strength is more powerful than physical charity. Because why? The mind generally is not stable, right? It runs around here and there. It's not going to be stable. It has to be stable to give charity. Indeed, wherever they were situated, all the devotees danced, chanted, and gave charity on the plea of the lunar eclipse, their minds overwhelmed with joy. Even in the heavenly planets, chanting and dancing was going on, for the demigods were very eager to witness the transcendental appearance of the Lord. Jai, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. So, this time when I went to Mayapur, I was witnessing all of us who were there, witnessing the rapid pace at which the new temple is being built, called the Temple of the Vedic Planetarium, POVP. Bhaktivinoda Thakur called it the Adbhut Mandir. The Adbhut Mandir, meaning the amazing temple, the super amazing temple. It's actually super amazing. Even while it's being built, it's super amazing. We all know when you construct something, you know, it takes, first of all, it takes a lot of money. And then generally the budget, you spend more than the budget. And by the time you finish, And by the time you finish, it's taken longer than what you estimated will be the amount of time it will take. But in the case of this temple, they are 20% under budget. And they are about close to 25% within the time of their projections. Things are moving so quickly. They're under budget because there are people coming out from the woodwork and saying, I would also like to help build this temple. Because they have heard what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, when this temple is built, Hare Krishna will become the religion of everyone on this planet. So everybody wants to get some credit. You know, we all want to preach, right? So everybody wants to get some credit towards building this temple. So that the words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when they become manifest, they can feel, I also did a little bit. So they've got people who are coming and saying, I'd like to help with the construction, so the labor cost is going down. There are people who are saying, we'll dredge the Ganga and give you sand. And as you know, sand is such a big cost. They say, I think a truckload of sand in India now costs 40,000 rupees. One truckload of sand costs 40,000 rupees. Because there's so much construction going on in India right now. They can't find sand. You know, in America, nobody's building anything because, you know, we've gone bust. But in India, they're like thriving. So they're building all these huge buildings. And here we are building our building, which, by the way, the Guinness Book of Records has said, once it is complete, will be recorded in the Guinness Book of Records as the largest Hindu temple in the world. Right now, the largest Hindu temple in the world is in New Delhi. By the way, Dallas is the new Delhi. So, in New Delhi, they have this temple called Akshardham that's built by the Swami Narayans. It's the biggest Hindu temple in the world. Our temple will be bigger than that temple. That's how big this temple is. So, you know how we have a pujari room, right? So in Vedic temples, they will build a pujari room on the lower floor, and above that will be the temple. You see that? So the pujari room can be as big as the temple, because it has to be, because it has all these dresses of the devotee, of the deities, and all of the paraphernalia. So you need to store them properly. Now, our deity room is probably a third of the size of this temple, right? Maybe a third. Maybe less than a little than a third, but it's quite big, but it's not the same size as the temple. In the temple of the Vedic Planetarium, the pujari room occupies one whole floor. It is in size 20 times bigger than this whole temple. That's just the pujari room. And they were telling us when we were going through that they think that the pujari room is going to be too small. They already think it's going to be too small. And above that is the floor. Now, where is the pujari room? This is the interesting part. How many of you have been to Mayapur, Sri Mayapur? Okay, so you know the conch building, right? The conch building, which is the probably the most famous building because it's the one that adjoins the mandir, the Chandradaya mandir. The roof of the conch building is below the pujari room of the new building. The roof of the conch building is below the pujari room of the new temple. That's how high the pujari room is. Above that is the temple, and then above that are the 14 planetary systems, which is why we call the temple of the Vedic Planetarium. So that's going to scientifically explain creation and show how existing creation is scientifically structured. Now, that's such a huge dome, by the way. The dome is so huge, and it's all pure marble, by the way, that when you say anything there, because marble, it resonates sound. So there's a vibration that comes as a result. That vibration is so loud, they showed us, and you can see it on if you go on the website of the temple of the Vedic Planetarium. Now, they have it on the website. I don't know if they show this part. If they don't, I'll get a copy, so I'll have you hear it. They do show. Srila Prabhupada giving class in the temple of the Vedic Planetarium. Okay? So when he's giving class, the vibration is so much, you can hardly tell what he's saying because every one of his words is vibrating so much that it clashes into the next word and the next word and the next word. So, you know, you can't really tell exactly what he's saying. So they thought to themselves, oh my God, we're building the best temple in creation and nobody will be able to give a lecture in that class. Nobody will be able to do kirtan. Because when you do kirtan, you can't hear the names because the names are all clashing with one another. So you can't make out what the mantra is that everybody is chanting. So how are we going to solve this problem? That's the real problem. So they had the best engineers in the world to see this problem, consider this problem, how we can solve this problem out. And the devotee engineers came up with the answer. The top engineers in the world couldn't figure out what the solution was. The devotee engineers came out with the answer. If they would put a layer of glass over the marble, then, depending on the quality of the glass, the vibration comes down. And they did that. They figured out how they're going to do it. And then they played Prabhupada's class again, and it came out perfectly. Miraculous things are happening like this. Engineers around the world are baffled by so many things. One example. When you lay concrete, it is said that it has bird's nests in them. I thought, what's a bird's nest? You know what I mean? I mean, I know what a bird's nest is. But immediately it gave me the idea of, you know, the last Olympics that happened in China? They had this huge stadium called the bird's nest. You notice that? The huge stadium called the bird's nest? Okay. What they mean when they say a bird's nest is that in concrete, there will be pores. There'll be pores. And in the pores, living entities can go and actually reside. So they call it bird's nest. Of course, it's not as big as a bird can reside in it, but unless it's a small bird. So what happens is the international standard is that you can have 20% pores in the concrete. That's fine. That is considered good quality workmanship. The devotee engineers decided when they asked the construction company to quote what they will charge to build a temple, they gave them a standard of 1% bird's nest. Means the concrete can only have 1% pores in it. Construction company said, it's not possible. We've never built, nobody in the world has built anything with 1% pores in it. They said, well, you don't have a job then. No job. You don't quote 1%, no job. So they quoted 1%, thinking to themselves, oh my God, we're going to have to really pump up the price to make sure that it is 1%. And they tested it, the engineers tested it, and they figured out how they're going to do it. So they signed the contract, 1% pours on the concrete that's laid. So one time they laid the concrete, and every time they do anything, the devotee engineers, the whole cadre of devotee engineers go inside and they test everything. They check it millimeter by millimeter. Everything is perfect. Because this is going to be the perfect temple. This temple has got, you know, columns going down into the ground 100 feet. What do they call them? They call them piles. They have 3,500 piles going 100 feet. Because they think the Ganga may shift and come underneath the temple. So the temple should be able to float. Nothing should happen to the temple, even if the Ganga came underneath. Because the Ganga is not 100 feet deep, right? So they went right up to bedrock. So even if the Ganga comes and the Ganga can flow underneath it, nothing will happen to the temple. The temple will stand straight and every door will close properly and open properly. It won't even shift. This is how highly engineered this structure is. And it's the biggest structure in the world, Hindu structure in the world. Marble and concrete, that means it's heavy. So these guys built a wall. When they finished building the wall, immediately the engineers went in and tested it. They found it was 2% bird's nest. It went immediately to the supervisor, break the wall down. What? You have to break this wall down. Why? It's got 2% bird's nest in. No, it hasn't. It's got 1%. The guy went and tested it. He said, yeah, it's not quite 2%. It's 1.75%. That's 1%, he said. No, he said, that's not 1%. That's more than 1%. That's 2%. So they had a big fight. In the end, they told the construction company, you can't continue construction. You don't break that wall down, you can't construct. It took them a whole month to break the wall down. That's how solid the wall was. But they promised themselves they'd never do it more than 1% bird's nest again, because our engineers are so sharp, they pick it up. Despite all of this, The program is going ahead of time. In the next 3 years, this temple is going to be complete. So one of our very, very intelligent devotees in our movement is Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. Very intelligent devotee, we all know. When he gives classes, everybody loves hearing his classes, you know. He's very intelligent. He's able to analyze things and figure things out, you know. So he said at the GBC meetings, he said, actually, this temple, he said, just like in our philosophy, we say, if you water the root of a tree, then every branch and leaf will get its nutrient. So the philosophy is, if you worship Krishna, then all the demigods will be served. All living entities will be served if you worship Krishna. Similarly, if we contribute in any way to building this temple, all of ISKCON will become fully nourished. And all of ISKCON all over the world will flourish. So immediately they got a hold of this idea that now they're going to promote this, that everybody should help the building of this temple. And because I'm the chair of the North American GBC this year, I was given the task to lead that, asking everybody to please donate towards this temple so that we can build it. Right now they have $30 million. They've spent $20 million. And they have $10 million balance in their account. And so we're now going to start giving more and more money so that that account remains afloat all the time, and any money they need to spend. They're expecting that in the end, they would have spent around $60 to $70 million to finish this temple, including everything. They're doing the interior decoration already inside right now on the computer, making the plan. It's so beautiful. It's hard to even imagine the beauty of the sculpture and the colors. And, you know, look, normally they put sculptures, they don't paint them. These guys are going to paint them, so it'll be very beautiful in colors also. Not only beautiful sculpture, but beautiful color decorations also. It's really very amazing. Actually, when the temple is complete, the real value of the temple will be more like $120 million. But they would have spent $70 million to do a $120 million job, which is considered in this world like impossible. So, you know, generally people complain about ISKCON, right? That you spend too much money. You guys always, you know, you don't use our money properly. This will be the proof that ISKCON is actually the other way around. That ISKCON actually spends its money very wisely. We are the ones who are really under budget. The other ones are not spending their money properly. And this is happening in a Hindu country, right? Where the Hindus are, you know, generally very miserly people, right? They don't like to spend too much money. Even if it's a temple of God, they'll build it slipshod just so they can have a temple of God. They even don't care. It's God's temple. It should be built so nicely, you know what I'm saying? That type of thing. So we're actually witnessing a real miracle in action. Anyway, we'll speak about this a little more on Friday next week. We're going to have a session here at 7 o'clock where we're going to discuss the GBC meetings, what happened at the GBC meetings, which is amazing what happened at the GBC meetings, how every devotee is going to be now fully empowered to preach. What are we going to do so that every devotee is fully empowered to preach, not just the leaders? It's really nice how everybody's now planning. And just amazing things happen there. And if we describe it, then you know you'll understand, and it'll be really very nice. Anybody wants to ask any questions or say anything about Gauranga Mahaprabhu? Yes, Prabhu. Yes.
I just, a quick comment. I was, when you were mentioning the temple and building that temple, I remembered a story that Giriraj Swami tells. And a lot of devotees may have heard this, but I thought I'd repeat it.
Yes, yes.
But Giriraj Swami was in, I think they were in Juhu, and he'd been chanting near Srila Prabhupada. He went into Srila Prabhupada and he said, Srila Prabhupada, I think I've understood two things that you want for us to do. And that is that you want us to distribute your books and build the big temple in Mayapur. Mm. And Prabhupada's eyes got real wide, and he said, yes, you have understood my desire.
Jai, jai, jai.
Sri Prabhupada ki.
Jai. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when this temple is built, you know how inside ISKCON right now, there are some differences between the different races. Especially when you go to Mayapur, you notice this, that the Bengali devotees and the rest of the ISKCON devotees from other countries really don't get along too well. You know what I'm saying? Because both of them feel, we got it. You know, the Bengalis think, we got it. We're running the whole Mayapur. Look how beautiful it's running. And the the American and other devotees think, but that's not ISKCON style. We want it ISKCON style, you know, the old ISKCON style like that. So, you know, they have clashes like that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that when this temple is built, all the races of this world will unite. The races of this world will unite and they will chant. What is the verse? Something, something, Gaura Hari. Something, Jai Sachinandana Gaura Hari. Or something like that. Isn't it? Something verse like that. They'll all chant Jai Sachinandana Gaura Hari. Like that. Everybody will come together and chant together. So, you know, that's only 3 years away. The world is going to unite. So start preaching now. You're going to have so many people who join your preaching. Start building your teams now. Just start preaching. Everybody should build their teams and preach, preach, and preach. That way, everybody will have full satisfaction. Yes, Prabhu.
Jiva Goswami said that verse, Adbhut ek mandir hoibe prakash, Gauranga nitya lila hoibe bikash.
Right.
This amazing temple.
Jiva Goswami said.
Yeah.
Yes.
The amazing temple will manifest.
Right.
And all eternal service, the Gauranga Mahaprabhu will be continued.
Will be established.
Established.
Yes.
And actually the point you said, the race in ISKCON.
Yeah.
Yes, last time I was in Mayapur, I was taking prasad, one Rabindranath Prabhu disciple, American devotee. So we're discussing, and then he was a little frustrated with the situation.
Yeah.
So I feel bad actually, because a devotee local over there, their mood should be what actually Prabhupada work hard, as a Dharma Prabhu mentioned that. Giriraj Maharaj understood the point.
Yes, yes, yes.
That distribute my books and build the temple.
Yes, yes.
Because all over the world support, and this temple is coming up and manifest. Like Ambarish Prabhu was telling other day that after I seen this temple progress, it's give the glimpse of the devotee cooperation.
Yes.
When devotee cooperate. How much we can do, because you said that we are progress work 25%.
Fast, yeah.
Yeah. So these are happen because devotees really cooperate each other.
Yes.
So that's actually after building temple, the it's going on very fast, but this is one thing has to be very careful. We have to know racism and this.
Yes, no
it
racism.
Should be very clear that, you know, some or other the our leader always staying back now.
Right,
then
right.
Even if you see my all those crowd of devotees, but no, I don't see that many proper disciple or sannyasi. They left own June, you know, have a preaching mission. So somehow we have to really get trained up on that point. It's very important.
Very
Otherwise,
good.
It will be really kind of people will laugh with us.
Yes. Actually, the GBC is actually working on that because they figured that out. See, one of the problems they find is this. When the temple is built, the question will be, who will be the administrators of this new temple? And already there's a fight.
Yeah, it's just
we will administrate the temple. They all know this is going to be a really fantastic temple, so everybody wants to administrate it. So the GBC is now already starting to work out how they're going to bring all these different groups together and unite them so that everybody understands that we are a united Hare Krishna movement. We are not separated by our skin color or our other, you know, designations, whatever those designations might be, whether we are wealthy or poor, educated or uneducated, all these different designations that there are, that we will not allow these designations to come in the way. So it's very nice, this idea of unity, how to bring about unity amongst the devotees. And again, some of the devotees asked me to head up that one, to bring about unity amongst the devotees. So I thought, well, we'll start here in America first, and then show it that it can work in America, it can work anywhere.
I think sometimes I get a little confused. We are preaching in ISKCON. Those are newcomer.
Right.
Actually, whatever way we train them up, they follow ISKCON devotee. They have read Prashila Prabhupada books, very committed.
That's
if we say, okay, four principles, regulative principle, book distribution, shirt distribution, they work on it. But I think it's... that the who going to manage administrator, they say I'm going to manage it. I think this mode maybe we need to really not trained up from higher source of authority.
Yeah.
That's why maybe this happening like
that's
that.
That's right. That's if right. They're following the example.
Right.
We're exactly. not setting a good example. The good leaders example. Are not setting a good example.
Exactly. I mean, sometimes I feel confused. What's happening? We following for regulatory principle.
Right.
We give up everything. We came in ISKCON. And why not we can work together for, you know, so everybody can, we have blissful and everybody can also happy when they join with us. That's so right. I think just maybe we can clarify how we can get really from higher authority source, really working on GBCs. They get trained up. Those are newcomer now. They're really sometimes
doing
groupism. So this really sometimes...
One thing they're doing now is they're taking the leaders through training programs. All GBCs and gurus and sannyasis now compulsorily have to go through retraining. They're going to be trained on these aspects so that they can be, they'll be shown the damaging effects of them in their leadership, showing example of people that, let's say, for example, if a guru, a sannyasi, if a sannyasi looks like they're wealthier than the grihastha, that sets a bad example, right? That means the grihastha thinks, better I become a sannyasi, I'll be wealthier. That's not supposed to be the example. The example is supposed to be the other way around. The grihastha is supposed to be the wealthier. The sannyasi is supposed to be very renounced. So they're being told now that, look, when you do this this way, this is the effect it has. So you will be blamed for the problems that we have in the future. People will say that this is what the sannyasis were like. Of course, now they're going to change because of the training. But those sannyasis that don't give up their situation like that, they will be criticized severely. Nobody wants to be criticized severely. So the sannyasis are now voluntarily agreeing to go through training. The gurus, the biggest gurus, are going through training again. They're being taken through classes, how to be guru. They already got tens of thousands of disciples. And yet they're being trained how to be guru on the other side. Because they're being told that when you're a guru and you decide you're going to have someone as a disciple and another guru also fights for the same disciple, that's not setting a good example. Why are we fighting for disciples? Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, we say. Then why are we fighting for disciples? Why don't we have many more gurus so no guru will fight for a disciple? Because like Kalakanta Prabhu said, it's better to have 1,000 gurus with 12 disciples than 12 gurus with 1,000 disciples each. You know, better to have 1,000 gurus with 12 disciples each than if you have 12,000 disciples than to have 12 gurus with 1,000 disciples each. So, you know, we had a talk with the Guru Services Committee. It became very heated. The argument became very heated. Because a guru is not just going to give up like that. You know what I mean? So, these are developments that are happening, that are amazing developments happening. How the rank and file devotee is becoming empowered now. That no, we should give everybody the opportunity. Amar Agyaya Guru Hana Tarai Desh is for everybody, not just for a select group of people, you know. So things like that. These are nice changes coming about. Women's area, why no woman guru is there, this, that. All those issues are coming up now. Okay. So it's, yes, Maharaji. Yeah, I've got it here. You can take it from me and then give it back to me. And somebody else might take it from you so that way they can see it also. I'll give it to you. I've got it here somewhere. Any other? Yes, Prabhu.
Hey, Krishna. I just had a question pertaining to a topic that you were speaking of earlier. I'm very new to Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And as a new bhakta, you get to hear lots of things from everybody.
Right.
Everybody lets you know what they know. I don't mean it in a bad way, but you know, it's true. As soon as they see someone new, they let them know everything they know.
Right.
But so I hear a lot of things all the time, every day.
Yeah.
And I was just curious, within the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition in our philosophy, does nationality, race, ethnicity, what does it have to do with anything? Advancement, guru, sadhana, service, anything. What does race, ethnicity, or anything like that have to do with that thing at all? How does it correspond within our tradition?
It has nothing to do with it, but you know, that's natural that people in the material world will think like that. By the way, I have to say one thing, and to clarify. The problems that we have inside ISKCON are 5% of the issue. 95% is going fine. So let's not forget that there is a lot of good happening. You know, whilst we're looking at the 5% that needs to be corrected, because we're like that, you know, 1% bird's nest. We're trying to get to a standard that only 1% of the things, or half percent of the things are going wrong. 5% is unacceptable. Break it down, rebuild, you know what I mean? To get it to that half percent, 1% standard. That's what it is that we're doing. It's not like the movement is going wrong, because sometimes people will say, oh, the movement's having so many problems. They have no idea what's going right in the movement. They have no idea that the movement is right now around 100 times bigger than when Srila Prabhupada left this planet. 100 times bigger. Okay? You can't have a movement that is going wrong that's going to be 100 times bigger all of a sudden. And qualitatively good too, by the way. Solid in quality also, both. So, really what we're looking at is the 5% issues, you know? So let's not bend ourselves out of shape and think that, wow, so many things going wrong in ISKCON. No. Look at what's happening here in this temple room. We can chant nicely. We can hear the glories of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Nobody's having a problem, right? So many, like this, there are many, many great things happening in the movement. And really wonderful. I wanted, again, to give a bit of a report at the time of the GBC discussions that we'll have about some of the things that are happening. Like, for example, the Delhi temple distributing 850,000 plates of prasadam a day. 850,000. Okay? And their target is to raise it to 2 million. That's their target, to raise it to 2 million. You know? So please, there are big things happening like all over the world. That's why I keep saying this is the new Delhi. I'm trying to see if we can copy New Delhi. These guys are so great in the things that they're doing. And they're keeping their system intact. They're very pukka about Mangal Arati, this, that, and everything. Chanting rounds, everything. They're staying pukka. They're not like loosening the standard so others can join. No, they're not loosening their standard at all. They're very strict in their standards, and yet they're growing. So, good example to follow. Of course, New Delhi is the gateway to Vrindavan, as you all know. We all go to Vrindavan through New Delhi. So, now New Delhi's got 3 guest houses. First, you have 1 guest house, but it doesn't have enough space. So, it's the second guest house called Nityananda Kutir, and then they built a 3rd one called Chaitanya Kutir. And now, I guess they'll build a 4th one also. They can't house devotees. There's so many devotees from overseas that are coming through. And they don't allow the others to stay in the guest house because they want to serve the devotees who are coming from overseas. They say that the devotees who are serving overseas get 10,000 times more great marks than those who are serving in India. Because it's 10,000 times harder to preach overseas than to preach in India. So they're now respecting the overseas devotees. They're so respectful. Mahatma Prabhu was there. I met Mahatma Prabhu there. He said, I don't want to go back to the U.S., it's so nice here. Everything's so nice down here. They're throwing money at him. One of the devotees came and said, you know, why don't you stay in India and just preach in India? He said, I said, you know, they're joking with me. How much can you pay me? I said, you know. He said, how much would you want to get paid? I said, about $10,000 a month. I was joking with him, right? Nobody needs $10,000 a month in India. You ask $10,000. He said, we can pay you $10,000. He said, there's a devotee who came and he was thinking how much he'll get paid. We said, don't worry about the pay. You just do the service and you watch what happens. He was a guy who did seminars, right? So he decided to do seminars with some corporate people. In 3 days, this actual fact, in 3 days, he earned $40,000. Who's rich? Tell me one temple in America that can pay you $40,000 in 3 days of service. That's what they paid him, $40,000, for the 3 days service that he did with a corporate. That's how much they got out of that corporate circle. You see what I'm saying? Tell you, I mean, that means that they're really going gangbusters down there. And they're not into money, by the way. They're not paying people money. It's just people coming from overseas think they need money. They're going to need money to spend in India, right? So they still have that conception, no, I still have some pay. Then I can have my own house and I can preach and things like that, which is fair. Grihasthas need that. But they don't have a problem with money now. Money is never the problem in India. Their problem is capacity. They have a capacity problem. They don't have devotees who can preach. You can open your mouth, flap your mouth a little bit. I'll just give you an example. Nityananda Trayodasi, they asked me to do the inauguration of this temple. So I said, you know, some words in Hindi, by the way. They asked me to give the class in Hindi. 5 minutes before the lecture is about to start, the person comes and tells me, you're going to have to speak in Hindi. I said, oh my God, all my lectures are in English. How am I going to speak in Hindi? And this is to people in Delhi who speak very good Hindi, by the way, okay? This Delhi Hindi is considered really good Hindi, you know what I mean? And here I am, you know, don't give classes in Hindi. So I gave the lecture in Hindi anyway. 2 of them became inspired. 2 people who weren't chanting Hare Krishna became inspired. I don't know how many others did. But 2 of them came to me, one a boy and one girl. And they said to me, from today, we're going to chant 16 rounds and follow the four regulated principles. I thought, oh my God, in America, you can preach like that? Nobody comes and tells you, okay, from today, I'm going to chant 16 rounds and four. They asked me, how many rounds can I start with? And I tell them, one round, two rounds. You can, don't worry about the regulated principles, just chant one round. That's how we start in America, right? These guys come themselves and tell. Now, the girl happened to be a professor in a college. So she says to me, I also heard you saying that the teacher is the best student. So if you preach, you'll become Krishna conscious faster if you preach. Because when you're preaching, you know, you have to learn faster. So please preach. I was saying that in Hindi, you know, that the teacher is the best student. So she said, I'm a professor, so I would like to preach. Please tell me how can I preach? I mean, how am I going to tell her how to preach in like 10 minutes sitting in front of a stand? So I told her some things, you know. I have a 5-minute system myself that I use in my preaching. So I told her that 5-minute system. Okay, fast forward. It's now Srila Gurudev's disappearance day, 5th of March. I'm again in Delhi. They brought me to the same center, asked me, because it's Gurudev's, you know. They love Gurudev there, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So they said, you know, why don't you run that program, you know, again. So 150 people turned up. And just about at the end of my lecture, this girl turns up and she, you know, says, I'm really sorry, I came late. You know, my person was going to bring me here got stuck with something else. And so we got late coming, but forgive me, you know. So she said, but I want you to know that I'm preaching. And I said, oh, that's very nice. And so I said, how is it going? She says, I got 350 people in my group. In 2 weeks, she's got 350 people in her preaching group. I told her, I said, you need to tell me how to preach. You need to teach me, I said. I don't have 350 people in my group after 20 years of preaching. How did you do that? You know, what did you do that you have 350 people? I mean, this is the type of thing that's happening there. It's catching like wildfire, you know, just wildfire. Anybody, I can tell you, any one of us who feel like we're not doing much here, you go there. There'll be people falling at your feet and saying, thank you. Because, you know, here it's hard to preach, right? People really don't listen, you know. They do listen, but they don't catch on quickly. They've got an independent spirit. No, I still need to do what I'm doing. And yeah, I want to add this in there, you know what I mean? And I'll check it out, then I'll see. And, you know, forget full-time, I'll do it part-time, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, what happens is that we are working very hard to preach as a result. We're trying to think, how can you do it? We're working hard. And you won't believe our standard. Our standard is very high of preaching in America. Our problem is not the preachers in America. Our problem is that Krishna has got a tough set of coconuts in America to break. You know, it's these people out there like tough coconuts, you know what I mean? Hard to break open. Whereas in India, it's like easy to break them open, you know what I mean? They just hear and they feel, yeah, this is really good. And especially if they hear, oh, you came from America and you're talking like this? Oh my God, I should be ashamed of myself. I live in India and I don't know this. That's how they feel, you see. So they listen even more to somebody who comes from overseas. Even if you're Indian-bodied and you go from overseas and they say, you're preaching in America, they think, oh my God, this is how much you know in America and we don't know anything in India. They're humble enough to admit that and they take on the process really nicely. So if any of you are having money problems, find a way to buy a ticket. To New Delhi, I can guarantee you, because other places I don't know. I'm sure same thing is happening in Mumbai, same thing is happening in Calcutta, same thing is happening in Chennai and Bangalore and other places also, Hyderabad. But Delhi, at least I know. Get a ticket to Delhi, man. You will be amazed how you can preach in Delhi. And, you know, suddenly you'll see people join. They're like, oh my, can you please be my initiating guru? That's the question. Can you initiate me? No, I can't initiate. Okay, can you be my Shiksha guru? They don't take no for an answer. Okay, you can't be my initiating guru. Can you be my Siksha guru? Yeah, I can be a Siksha guru. Okay, so be my Siksha guru. Just teach me. I'm ready to do. Tell me, I'll do. Like, that's how they talk down there, you know. That's really good. You know, you feel really good down there, you know. When I was there, I was thinking I should spend 6 months in India and 6 months in America. You know? I learned more money in those 6 months that I can't spend it in America in 6 months. Anyway, but this is all Lord Chaitanya's mercy. This is purely Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Lord Chaitanya is so powerful. And he is very happy with those of us who are in America. Because you look at how many people in this, you know, in Delhi, if a lecture like this was going on, it'll be packed. There's no space there. You come and you stand and you hear a class if you came late. You can stand and hear the class now. Because there's no sitting space because you came late for class. And here, look at this. There's more sitting space than people. That means those of us who are sitting here are very determined. That's why we're here. Even though we're not very encouraged, we're very determined. Can you imagine what Lord Chaitanya is thinking? Okay, you're that determined? I will bless you. I will really, really bless you. So we're very fortunate, those of us who are here in America preaching. Very fortunate position. But we must preach. Must preach. Please preach. Don't think to yourself, oh, I don't know anything. You know a lot. You're looking for an excuse when you say that you don't know anything. That's just your excuse. You're being lazy. Don't be lazy. Don't find excuses. Go out and preach. And there are people coming to our temple. I see people coming to our temple many times. Nobody talks to them. They come, they stand here, they look at some things, and they go on again. They go out again. Nobody has said a word to them when they came into the temple or left. That's a crime. Every person who comes to this temple, we should be talking to them, saying, thank you very much for coming. Please, these are the deities. This is Kalachanji. This is Radharani. This is Srila Prabhupada. You know, these are nice paintings. These are the demigods, and that's Garuda there. And, you know, just say things like that. And you'll be surprised how conversation will kick off. They'll ask questions, and you'll answer their questions. We're not pressuring them. We're just being nice hosts. Thank you for coming. Make sure they get some prasadam. Please come again. If you'd like, you know, us to send you update about what's happening at the temple, give us your email address. We'll make sure that you get the katha and you'll come to know. Simple things like that. And you'll build such nice relationships and people become nice devotees as a result of your preaching. Okay, we can go on and on and on, but we've got a meeting that's supposed to happen at 9:30 that I'm supposed to be also attending. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki. Sri La Prabhupada ki. Nitai Gaura Premanande Hari Hari Bo. Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki.